Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pure Nintendo Podcast. This is your weekly dose of all things Nintendo. My name is Gemma, and joining me this week, I have my two excellent friends. I have Kirk. Welcome back, Kirk.
I like the way your voice dropped when you said that. It sounded like...
Oops. And also joining me this week is Trev. Welcome back, Trev.
I like the excellent. I feel like we're Bill and Ted here. Excellent yeah. Podcast.
That's what I'm going for. Exactly. Welcome back, both of you. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you, listeners. We've got a big show. We've got lots to talk about this week. There was quite a bit in the news, Nintendo related. Nintendo dropped their kind of fiscal earnings report during the week that they do every year. Yes, every quarter, but this is their annual one that they do. So we'll go through that. A few other bits and pieces, including that Nintendo World Championships that we mentioned last week has now been officially announced. Plus the games we're playing, of course, and a little Switch 2 kind of update as well. Actually, it's a big Switch 2 update. Switch 2 rumor is the little one, but Switch 2 itself actually is what's kind of official now. That's the big thing of the week because of this fiscal report. Nintendo, we all kind of speculated this might happen or something would happen, but it was on, I think it was Tuesday in Japan. They had their fiscal report to their, I guess, to their stakeholder or their investors, right? It's like an investor briefing where they go through their annual earnings and forecast for the next sort of 12 months or so. And the fiscal year ends in April. So for Nintendo, March the 31st is the end of their fiscal year. So this report is all up until March 31st, 2024. And now they're talking about up until March 2025. And I guess the really big thing that we were all interested in was whether they would mention the Switch 2, and they did. So what was the actual quote? It was Nintendo, did I write it down? I should have written it down. Basically, they did say that they will announce a Switch successor during this next fiscal year, which is pretty exciting. That's a pretty much official, you know, official statement that they're working on something, which we all speculated and knew anyway. How do you guys feel about this? Are we excited? Are we surprised? Trev's probably happy about the timing because you predicted 2025 would be the Switch 2.
I'm excited. I'm finally going to edge Justin in our yearly predictions.
I
think it is what I expected. So I wasn't necessarily surprised. I'm also glad they said Switch successor because I feel like, you know, as fans and even in the industry, we've gotten in the habit of just calling it Switch 2, but we still don't know what it's going to be called. Mm-hmm. So, although there's rumors. So, but I guess I'm more intrigued, you know, since they specifically said like the upcoming direct, I don't want to get ahead of it, but. You know, it's just going to be about existing Switch games because we don't really know anything about the second half of the year. Mm-hmm. So I'm more excited, you know, to see that than I am to eventually learn more about this Switch successor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I mean, I'm excited as well. I think it's good that they kind of put that sort of little rumor mill to bed, at least for now, in terms of the next direct. So there's a direct coming in June, which... You know, lately we've been getting directs dropped, like almost shadow dropped, right? Like within a day or two. Hey, there's a Nintendo Direct tomorrow. We've been given like a month's notice this time that there will be a June Direct, but they've specifically said it will not talk about Switch successor, whatever that's called, whatever that looks like, we don't know, but they will not be talking about that. It's all Switch content for the next 6 months, which is actually great because, yeah, I'm kind of excited to see what this kind of twilight phase, as we keep referring to it, for the Switch will look like. What are we going to get? And I would love to hear from you both what you expect or hope for the next, you know, 6 months. Will there be a couple more interesting ports, do you think, or something new? Like, will there be one final big new game, a first party kind of thing? Or what do you guys think?
Before we move ahead to that, I want to raise one concern, I think, with the timing of the way they phrased it. Could, you know, they're going to announce the Switch successor within the next fiscal year. And if we go off Trev's theory that they have never released a system the same year it was announced, that gives them 3 months to actually wait to announce the system in 2025. And then if history plays itself out, then we're not getting a new system until 2026.
Oh, wow. I didn't think of that.
True.
Now, yeah. I don't think that'll happen. I think they're just giving themselves an awful lot of cushion. And I'm assuming the Switch successor, as they call it, will be announced at the end of this year. But yeah, they did give themselves 3 months to not make the announcement until 2025.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I think maybe the fear is they don't want to cannibalize like the last big holiday for the Switch.
Yeah.
Because if people, you know, the Wii U was kind of an oddity, right? Because it wasn't really a success by Nintendo standards, but the Switch is still selling, as we're going to get into. And, you know, if they announce that, then, you know, come the holiday shopping season, people are like, oh, I'll just save up for the new one. And, you know, I don't think they want to, you know, damage the brand, as it were, in its twilight years.
It could also be, I think, that they have one or two launch titles that they really want to have available on day one, and those are still in development. So if they want to make sure that those are going to be ready, then I assume when they announce the Switch successor, they're going to give us a release date at the same time. So they would need to know that those games are going to come out, or at least a release time frame, you know, when those are ready. So they may hold the hardware or the announcement for that, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I reckon you're on the money there, I think. But I just don't know the timing. Yeah, exactly. Will they announce it? You know, they traditionally do like a September direct. Would that be the time to do it? But that seems odd in terms of the Christmas thing, like you're saying, or the holiday season, Trev. Yeah, but then if you announce it early, like January 2025, do they then release it in 2025 or not? As we said, history shows that they don't announce and release
it. At least now we have some sort of, like, people were chomping at the bit, like, any day we're going to get news. At least now, you know, it reminds me of, like, the proverb, right? You know, expectation postponed makes the heart sick. Like, gamers were getting ill waiting for news on the Switch 2. Mm-hmm. And each day that goes by, they're getting more antsy. So I feel like now you can kind of take a breath and be like, hey, all right, it's coming. But in the meantime, let's focus on Switch and play some of these new games, play some of the games that are yet to be announced or, you know, our backlog, whatever, and just keep us focused on the here and now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think that's a really positive way to look at it. I'm very excited about the whole thing. I think, I don't know if it's the best way to do it or the right way to do it, but for me, it's worked. I think it's good, exactly what you said, Trev, to have that almost like peace of mind. Yes, Nintendo has acknowledged it is coming, and we all love to hear about new Nintendo consoles. I mean, how many of us have been to midnight launches? And it's an exciting thing to get a new Nintendo device, and we haven't had one for many years. So it's huge for us in the industry and fans. So that's something to look forward to, but we now know we've kind of got our expectations set a little bit. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. We know in our minds something awesome is coming. Don't know what it is yet, but we'll find out soon. Let's see what's happening on the Switch, which we've loved and adored for the last 7 or so years. And it's still got more life in it. Let's find out what's happening. What, like I said, the twilight. What's left for this little system? Little system that could. Yeah. How can we enjoy that to the fullest while we can? Because then it's going to be all about Switch 2 next year. So.
Yeah. And I think to both your points, because Kirk was saying about how for the Switch successor, they want to have, you know, some launch games ready. And we were talking about this actually at our last just staff meeting, but like Metroid Prime 4, could that be like they did with Breath of the Wild, which was the final Wii U release and a Switch launch title? Could like Prime 4 be the final like big Switch game and also a launch title for the Switch successor or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but they did. Justin was saying they changed the status on that. It was always like, what do they call it when a game doesn't have an announced date? They list it as
coming TBD. Soon or something.
Yeah, TBD. Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that could be, maybe that could serve two purposes. I don't know. And I don't know how people would react to that, but after so many delays, I think we'd just be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that's that'll be the game. I mean, if they're going to have a June Direct that only focuses on content for the current Switch, then they better have something really big there, right? Not just, you know, kind of like a, some good games, some things, maybe like some more ports. Like if they have one really big announcement title, like this is it, here's the final hurrah, then, you know, in a way, it's a way to reward all the people who bought the Switch and held onto it so long to play it on that system, and then not use it as a launch title on this successor, but maybe eventually release it as a port 6 months down the road, a year down the road.
That's true. Can add some like DLC or post-game content.
Yeah, that's, I think that's like, that's a very possible outcome, I reckon. Yeah, we've been waiting for Metroid Prime 4 for a long time, and I feel like it's possible, even likely, that there will be one big new game, aside from ports, to come for the Switch. That could be it. I mean, we know it exists. We just don't know when when it's coming or onto which system. So it could be. It could be that one. Yeah, I do think that's likely. But, I mean, the Switch itself is still, like Trev said, it's still been doing well. It's, in terms of the fiscal report, it's sold more than, oh, sorry, in total now, we're up to over 141 million Switch sales across the last 7 years, which is incredible. And 15.7 million of those were during the last fiscal year, which, you know, is less, it's obviously decreasing over time now. It's had its peak, I think, in 2021, I believe, was the peak. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it, essentially it's, you know, it's declining. It's because it's got an installed fan base. Obviously, it's a bit long in the tooth now. That's to be expected. It's the end of its life cycle. It's coming up to the end of its life cycle. It's still doing well, still doing really well. And I think it's close now to being the number one. I think they're trying to get it to that number one console position, which, Trev, do you, you're good with numbers. Do you remember the number? I think it was the PS2 is currently number one.
Yeah, I think the DS and the PS2 are within a few hundred thousand of each other. I think it was like 154 point something million like to 155.
Yeah.
And the Switch is going to do it because, you know, you think about it, there's the three models, right? The OLED, the base Switch, and then the Switch Lite. None of those have really had price drops. And you know it's going to coexist after the Switch successor launches because that's always how it's been. You know, 3DS hung around for a few years after Switch and still pushed millions of units. So imagine if Switch, you know, 2 or Pro or whatever comes out, and they slash all those prices. Hey, we're going to knock $50 off the OLED, you know, $100 off the regular. So you can get a Switch Lite for $99, sort of like how the 2DS was at the end, really budget. Imagine how they would fly. So, yeah, there's no doubt it's going to happen. So,
yeah, yeah, that's exciting. Definitely going to happen. As to when, we'll see. But yes, a lot to look forward to the next year. So let's say, well, let's go back to that Direct and see what else we think or hope. We sort of talked about Metroid Prime 4. Are there any kind of ports or anything else you can think of or would like to see, do you think, from Nintendo in the next 6 months?
Trev, there's definitely one I want and people have talked about. That is Xenoblade Chronicles X,
which
we mentioned before, the Wii U game. That's the one that they haven't brought to the Switch. There are three Xenoblade Chronicles games on the Switch, and that's the hard one to do because it used the gamepad on the Wii U as like a secondary kind of like mapping system, and it was such a unique way to use it that they actually had like a tutorial, like a month. They released a few tutorials before the game started. One of them focused specifically on that mapping system,
right?
And the things that you could do with it. So it was really cool, and I don't know how they're going to do that. But I do expect eventually we'll see that brought over. I thought maybe depending on how the Switch successor comes over, maybe it would be easier on that somehow. Like maybe there's, I think we talked about the possibilities of how a second screen could be incorporated. But I think that would be a big one. If they announce that, then I'd be happy with what we have in the back half of the year.
Yeah, that would be exciting. I think I did hear, I did sort of read some other people hoping or speculating that could be a possibility as well. So you're not alone, Kirk. Definitely not. And to you know, Trev mentioned earlier, we don't know what the Switch is, the Switch 2 or Switch successor will be called, but someone actually did ask that question of Nintendo president Shuntaro Furukawa, and I love his diplomatic response that the Switch next model is the appropriate way to describe it. So
rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. Switch, Switch NM. So we're going with Switch NM, yeah? Switch.
I want the whole thing. I want the console to be called Switch Next Model is the appropriate way to describe it. It sounds like a very Japanese title, doesn't it?
It does. It so does. It so does. It could be, you know what, Switch Next. It really could be Switch Next or Switch X, maybe. I don't know. But that's just me speculating there. Yeah, I'd love that. It does sound very Japanese. When you translate some of their texts and you see the kind of cute and quirky ways they describe things, it's
so you break that down. Switch next model, appropriate way to describe it. That'd be like SNWAD if you abbreviated it.
Yeah.
Like NES, SNES, and now we have the SMOD.
Definitely rolls off the tongue there. Love it. Love it. I don't know how they're going to market that, but that's for the marketing guys to worry about.
People will be so confused, to be intrigued. Be like, what is this?
Yeah, imagine the kids asking their grandmothers for that.
Yeah. The what now? Jake's
having a stroke.
Exactly. Yeah. So, Trev, did you have any hopes for this June Direct that we can look forward to in about a month's time?
It's interesting because I was thinking back to the last Nintendo systems. The Wii U kind of ended with an original game. They had Paper Mario Color Splash. And the 3DS was a lot of updates of classic games like, the Metroid Prime Game Boy game. Got a remaster. They brought back like Kirby's Epic Yarn and Mario and Luigi. So... I don't know if they're going to do like one original game or if they're saving that for the successor and they're doing updates of like existing games. I'd probably lean towards the latter. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, depending on what they do with them. And, you know, not to get ahead, but like thinking with the NES game we're going to talk about, you know, Nintendo has a lot of games that were like lost on like WiiWare. Or, you know, DSiWare, some of that smaller digital content. What if they did like a compilation, and brought back some of those games that people had forgotten about or maybe, never played. I think that would be an inexpensive way, but also exciting because for a lot of us, it'd be new content. So I'd like to see some sort of collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, some brilliant ideas there. Who knows, right? Exactly. I don't know. I think with two ports coming out pretty soon, like we've got one this month and one next month in terms of Paper Mario and Luigi's Mansion, I don't know if they will rely on those like Mario. They've done a lot of Mario ports recently. Like we had Mario RPG last year. I don't know if they could fall back on Mario again. For the Switch, the end of the Switch, but then Mario is, he's there.
Yeah, I think Mario would be more for the successor. I would think, but how about a top-down Zelda remake?
Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking. Is Zelda a possibility? That could sell well.
There are a lot of games that could be
Minish Cap.
You got the Minish Cap, you got the Oracle games, you got those DS games, you got Link Between Worlds. I mean, they could do a top-down Zelda to end Switch, and they could do one to start the successor with games to spare.
Yeah, and imagine if they linked somehow, like there was a story that somehow bridged both. I don't know. Now I'm getting really out of the box, but I don't know. Yeah, I do wonder if Zelda's going to happen because... we just haven't had any Zelda content since last year and people have been wanting Wind Waker and Twilight Princess. I don't think they would do those two. I think they might be too big for the end of a console. If they were going to port those, they might save them for a new console. but it's,
and I don't think they would do them together. Knowing Nintendo, they do them separate.
Yeah, exactly.
$60 each.
Yeah. So it could be one of those, I suppose. It could be Wind Waker.
I like the Minish Cap idea, though. Imagine if they did it in those, were they the kinship stones? Imagine if they just did like with the Korok seeds. Now there's 999 kinship stones.
Oh, that'll keep us busy waiting for the Switch.
Playing that game forever.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Well, related to that fiscal stuff, I saw that the Wii U was trending again. We love to talk about the Wii U. And I keep saying something like, the Wii U, it got a bad name, right? Like, and people talk about something like the Phantom Menace of Star Wars, you know, the Star Wars saga. And people love the Phantom Menace now because they grew up with it or whatever. And people are saying they love the Wii U because they grew up with it. It feels similar to me. But it was trending because, well, for some reasons, literally one tweet was just, you know, this the Wii U wasn't actually that bad. Like, yeah, it wasn't. It just wasn't marketed well. It wasn't bad at all. Anyway, the point is that, you know, with the fiscal stuff that we've just been through and the sales data, the Switch sold more, I think, in that last fiscal year than the Wii U did in its whole lifetime. Was it 13 or 14 million or something like that?
Yeah.
Poor Wii U.
Crazy.
Yeah. But it had great games, which, you know, a lot of them have been ported now to the Switch, so they didn't, you know, they got that second chance, which I think is awesome. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, well, Mario Kart 8 being a very obvious point, a case in point, but there's heaps of examples, honestly. And so I just love that the Wii U still gets some love. Mine's still plugged in. I haven't used it for a while, but it is still plugged in. It's sitting there looking at me right now. Yeah, but things like...
Come play me, Gemma. Come play me.
I'm sorry. I wonder, you know, speaking of the Wii U, and this is a bit of a random thing, but we were talking about upcoming games or games we'd like to see, but would they ever do another Nintendo, oh gosh, what was the one of the launch titles for the Wii U? It was like that Nintendo compilation, Nintendo Land, right?
Oh yeah, that was a great game.
Yeah, that was fun. Do you think they'd ever do anything like that again? I mean, that's a compilation of sorts, kind of. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not, because it kind of failed the way you failed.
It's hard to tell because we don't know what the... And in fact, I put this in my Let's Talk for the upcoming issue. Mm-hmm. I got it in early this time, so...
You did. How do you?
But we don't know what... Thank you. We don't know what the hardware gimmick is with the Switch successor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just going to be a more powerful Switch? Are they going to have some type of... Because you think about like the past hardware. You know, the DS introduced touchscreen. Then we had the Wii with motion controls. 3DS with the 3D effect and the Wii U with the gamepad, Switch now with the detachable Joy-Cons. What's Switch 2 going to have? And how are they going to incorporate that into games? Like Nintendo Land, like would Nintendo ever adopt an approach like to use mobile? So like you could play Nintendo Land games, but you'd still need a Switch successor. And then you can just play through like an app or something, kind of like we do with like the Rift Tracks game or, you know, with the dub or some of those other Jackbox games. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I think Kirk, you sort of alluded to something like that with the second screen a few weeks ago. We talked about that as an idea, didn't we, for the Switch successor, having a second
screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how likely it is, but it's something I'd be curious to see if they could somehow pull that off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh gosh, so much. See, this is why I'm excited, because there's all this speculation. You know, obviously we don't know what's real, but it's going to be something interesting. Nintendo always pulls something interesting out of the bag, and even if it is just an updated Switch, there'll be something, you know, Nintendo about it. There'll be something different or cool. There'll be some cool new games to look forward to. It's a good time to be in this. You know, to be a fan, to be in this industry, and to it's a really exciting time. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
I just had a thought too. And hopefully I don't see it in the notes, so I don't think, but they announced this week that the implementation between the Switch and Twitter or X is going to be discontinued, so you can't upload screenshots or video anymore. So I'm wondering, could the Switch successor bring back Miiverse? Because I used Miiverse a lot, and I think it's a nice... By and large, it was a nice social aspect, certainly less toxic than, you know, X has become.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And especially with the library that's, you know, so bloated, where games quickly get buried and forgotten about. I think Miiverse could give all these games a chance to shine because they'd all have their own communities. People could upload screenshots, videos, post questions, drawings, whatever. I'd love to see some type of Miiverse-esque experience come back for the Switch successor.
Yeah, me too. I think that would be really cool. And there's, you know, that's a good kind of suggestion slash speculation, I guess, because it is possible. A lot of people still talk about it. It seems people feel the same way as you, that it, you know, they miss it, they loved it. You know, Miis are still a thing. We still use Miis on our My Nintendo accounts or even on the Switch. Do we use them? No, I guess that's a different avatar. But we use them, for example, in Mario Kart Tour on the mobile game. Miis are, in fact, the upcoming tournament, which starts this week when we launch on Wednesday, is a Mii tournament. So they're really encouraging Mii races for the next 2 week period. So Miis are definitely still a thing.
Yeah, they're still around. I mean, they brought Miitopia over to the Switch.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. And I love the idea of Nintendo doing social because, like you said, Twitter/X is toxic. It's just, it can be awful. And Nintendo's not. Nintendo's just lovely. I was thinking this morning about Pikmin Bloom, for example. It's just such a lovely game. It's just so positive and fun and cute, but it's also, you know, you do these mushroom battles. I was thinking about this before the show because I didn't know if I was going to bring it up, but since you kind of alluded to it, you do these mushroom battles and you get a star rating. And even if you get a 1-star rating, it's like, good job, here's some rewards for you. It's not like, oh, you only got 1-star, frowny face. It's all just very, very positive, you know, very Nintendo. You get this little nickname like Awesome Mushroom Destroyer, whatever it is. You'll get a positive name in your little group, and it's just, it's all about walking, and it's all about community, and it's all about connections, you know, and friends, and you can help each other out with these little mushroom battles. You know, it's all about planting flowers and just making the world a nicer place. It's just so wholesome. I can't describe it any more than that.
There's the name for the next system, the Awesome Mushroom Destroyer system.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it just feels like people, you know, some people at least, embrace that, you know. And so Miiverse is similar in that it's a place to share enthusiasm for a game, for example, or whatever, and share pictures. It's not about calling out, you know, people and trolling and stuff like that. It's a different mindset. And I think that's something we kind of need in this world at the moment. So, yeah, and Nintendo can help facilitate that, then we'll be better for it. Hello, kitty. Hello, kitty.
Yeah, he's saying hello.
No, I've got a game to talk about soon with which features kitties. But the other thing that happened this week, which was an interesting talking point, is that Microsoft laid off some companies within their portfolio, and you know, that's kind of sad for the industry that they're losing money and they had to sack, you know, hundreds of employees. And that's a bit of a shock for all of those people who were affected. And it just makes me think about Nintendo and how when they were struggling with the Wii U, and I don't know if this is a fair comparison. I don't know what Microsoft's problems are and how they could fix them. But it seems like Nintendo tries really hard to keep its employees employed. Do you remember when Iwata took a 50% pay cut during the Wii U's kind of failing time and what that meant for the industry? Like, where, you know, the whole board took a pay cut. I think it was, I can't remember what it was exactly, but Iwata, who was the president at the time, took a 50% pay cut, which was really telling, I think, again, about Nintendo just being this important industry figurehead almost that just speaks almost for the people. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? Any opinion?
You know, it's interesting. I wish I could remember what I read or where I read it, but I feel like Microsoft kind of talking out of both corners of their mouth, because it's like they're doing these layoffs, but at the same time saying how important like the studio's types of games are moving forward. Mm-hmm. So it's like you recognize they're important, but yet you're like working against that spirit. Like it's confusing, especially to a casual viewer. And you know, no matter what they're going to do, I would just suggest that they convey it better. You know, I think people appreciate, you know, honest talk or direct talk. You know, maybe that's why they call it Nintendo Direct. You know, they tell it like it is, right? You know, it's like, yeah, please understand, we have to delay this game, or, you know, we're doing this for this reason. Microsoft needs to be like, yeah, we're doing these layoffs because of this, and this is how it's going to ultimately benefit you as a gamer, because we're trying to reorganize or reshuffle or refocus. They're not Nintendo, though. I'll say that.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, isn't that kind of the lament too? People are like, oh, it's not even like Xbox anymore. It's like Microsoft Box. Like,
yeah, that's it, exactly. Yeah, I think. Sorry, you go, Kirk.
No, I was also going to say that I didn't read everything or see everything, but it seemed to me that a lot of responses to all this coming from Microsoft were very well rehearsed PR statements that don't come across as genuine. It's like, we know what words we got to say, so we're going to dump them into, does Microsoft have their own AI chat thing? It's going to spit out a statement that sounds like we're doing the right thing, even though we're not going to do the right thing. It's all about the bottom line, and they're not going to come right out and say that. I'm not saying that Nintendo has never done anything like that, you know, with the 50% pay cut. I wonder if when they took that, they had a plan to get out of it. They were like, okay, well, we've got something like the Switch. We're really big on this. So yeah, we could take the pay cut now, because we know within a few years, we're going to be back on top of the world. So, you know, it's just a temporary thing. And I don't think Microsoft has that plan. If they did, they would come out and speak in more than just superlatives. like they tend to do.
Yeah. Copilot is their AI. So yes.
Okay. All right. There you go. Yeah. Copilot wrote everything that you heard, after that decision was made.
Yeah. That sounds accurate. Mm.
I feel like in the past, like when Nintendo's had to do, you know, like during the rougher days of like the Wii U, when Nintendo had to make announcements that maybe, you know, gamers weren't that thrilled with, I feel like at least, you know, all the higher ups, you know, the employees were kind of on the same page. In the case of like Microsoft, like it seemed like even all the big wigs weren't maybe like, you know, on the same page. You know, some people, again, I wish I could remember where I read it, but like we're caught off guard. You know, is it a communication issue? Like, are they not, you know, I don't know how they're divided up or what, but.
Yeah, and it's harder for Microsoft because, you know, they're not, of course, just doing Xbox. They've got all kinds of systems and things that they're working on. Nintendo is pretty singular in its focus.
Yes.
Not so much now that they're also making movies.
yeah, true.
But, you know, the people at Xbox, they're getting the commands from higher up. They're not the top of the chain. So they're answering to other people, unlike, you know, say Iwata. Or sorry, who took the pay cut? Was that right?
Iwata. Yeah,
okay. It wasn't Iwata.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's not like there are levels and levels above him saying something's got to be done. That was just like his decision. Whereas, you know, Microsoft, it's just scattered all over the place, and it's easy to shove blame to different things. And, you know, if one person takes a pay cut, then they look at the other departments. They're like, well, why didn't you do this? You know, so... It's just much more difficult on a corporation that large and that widespread.
Imagine if Iwata had done that, and then like Reggie's like, "Oh man, I didn't know anything about that," and then Miyamoto's like, "I'm not taking a pay cut." Like, can you imagine the discord among them? Like,
what are you doing, man?
Excellent points. Yes, thank you. Well, the other thing that we alluded to in terms of news for the week was this Nintendo World Championships NES edition that had the rating, the ESRB rating last week that we saw online. And it's been officially announced now, so no surprise there, but it's coming out on the 18th of July. And this one sounds really cool. And we didn't get to talk to you, Trev, because you weren't on last week, but we thought it sounded a lot like an NES remix. And the official description, I guess, is, is it official? It was from their website. How quickly could you collect a room full of coins in Super Mario Brothers, or snag the sword at the start of The Legend of Zelda, or clear the entire first course in Super Mario Brothers 3? Could you do it faster than your friends? okay, can you do it faster than the rest of the world? It's time to find out. So it's a challenge-based thing. And, you know, the Nintendo World Championships was a thing that ran for many years, right? Like an actual competition where people competed to become the world champion in Nintendo's eyes, at least.
This one, make a movie about it?
The Wizard?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that like the kid was going to that championship?
Yeah, it was. The Wizard is, it's such a cheesy movie, and it is largely a Nintendo commercial over the course of 90 minutes, but it's also awesome. And yeah, that was the big thing. He was going to the championship to, well, anyway, watch the movie, guys, if you haven't already.
Yeah,
or if you've seen the movie, leave us a comment. Well, yeah, depending on where you're listening, but
yeah.
It's, oh man, it's awesome. I want to rewatch it.
I don't think I ever saw that movie. I don't think I ever saw it.
It's Savage, right? The kid from Wonder Years was the.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Go into it with the right expect. It's so cheesy, but it's like endearing. Like, especially for me as an NES kid, because it's like, that was the thrill, right? You get to see all these NES games, or I think that was actually where you first saw footage of like Mario 3.
Oh, wow.
Back in the day, that was like, you know, that was it.
You know what I just learned also on Wikipedia here as I looked this up? And yeah, Fred Savage, I thought I've never seen the movie, but I remember bits of it. It was Tobey Maguire's uncredited film debut.
That's right. He was
really?
I forgot about that. That's right.
Wow. There you go. Spider-Man himself. Yeah. It's cool. Man. No, I've never seen it. I should watch it. I should add that to my list.
We could do a whole episode on the Wiz. Like maybe bring back Koopa Cast just for the Wizard.
Yeah, do a breakdown. That'd be really cool and exciting, actually. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, the NES edition of this new game, Nintendo World Championships, has over 150 challenges across 13 games, which is pretty cool. I think pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to it. Did you watch the trailer, Trev? Because I think this is pretty much up your alley.
You know, my only concern about it, I'm not even, did they say for if you want a physical edition, you can only pre-order it like from the Nintendo store?
I thought I saw that too, but I know my local games store is called EB Games in Australia. They definitely have it. So
I wonder if it's a regional thing, but
could be,
you know, because I was looking like the digital is like 30 and then you get the physical edition, which is double. And I was looking at like the goodies with it and I'm like, oh man, is that worth double? But at the same time, I want it physically, you know, especially as an NES kid. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get it, but I'm also going to grumble about it a little because I feel like that's expensive. Like you look at the NES Remix games. Those were a lot cheaper. Those were like eShop only games originally.
Yeah, they were.
You know, and those were what, like 15, 20 bucks. So
and the full versions of all these games are available for free if you're a Nintendo Online subscriber.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful, but yeah, I wish I didn't need a physical copy because then I would just spend 30 and probably be okay with it. But we'll have to see.
Yeah, exactly. It's the one in Australia at least seems to come with what does it come with? The game, obviously, a replica game pack. I think that looks like an NES cartridge kind of thing.
Yeah, like the sleeve or something. It's got like cards and
it's got five.
It's a good idea. I mean, after those NES Remix games, like they had the two volumes on the Wii U, then they released them physically, which was great. Then the 3DS got its own version, and you know, for years I've been saying, okay, they're going to keep going with this SNES Remix, N64 Remix, you know, Game Boy Remix. But I feel like this is the sort of game I would expect for the end of like a console life.
Yeah. It is more expensive.
I'm seeing here that the pre-order is open at Best Buy, GameStop, and Target.
I was misinformed then. But still $60.
Yes,
if you want
it's so 90.
If you want it, better hurry. Scalpers are going to make you pay more.
Yeah,
how much is it in Australia, Gemma?
90. $90, which is more than Princess Peach or Mario, Paper Mario, more than Mario, you know, Mario Kart, more than the usual first party titles in Australia, which retail for $80.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's expensive. That's expensive. I mean, how much is it digitally? For you guys, 30, right? Half the price.
Yeah, it's half the price.
Probably 40 or 45 for Australians digitally. But yes, interesting.
I wonder why they don't have, like, because a lot of times, like, you know, you look at some of these companies that publish digital games like Limited Run or Super Rare Games, they'll have like a physical edition that's like the game in a case, maybe with a manual. And then they'll have like a collector's edition that has all these goodies. I wonder why Nintendo doesn't have a middle of the road one. Like, here's the digital for 30. You can get the basic physical for like, I don't know, 45 or something. Yeah. And then if you're a real NES collector and you want all these extra goodies, then you pay a premium. But
yeah, true. Yeah. It's like they've just got the two options, really.
So. I'm like that Futurama meme, right? Shut up and take my money.
Yeah. 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 I've been watching the new Futurama, just FYI. But anyway. Yeah. Well, that's a couple months away. It's about 2 months. So we'll see how that goes. But definitely, it sounds like fun. The challenges look, some of them seem quite short, right? Like getting to a door in Mario or doing really quick, short events and seeing how it's like microseconds, you know, but there's going to be microseconds between, you know, first and second or something. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
And like, is this game going to have any value for people who aren't online, who don't do Switch Online and access the leaderboards? What's going to happen when the Switch becomes like, you know, the Wii U or the 3DS just did and losing online, you know, is the game going to be a paperweight or are we still going to be able to enjoy it? Like with just local leaderboards, you know, local competition.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Honestly.
I have to look into it more.
Yeah. Cause I feel like without that online component, it's really, you're just challenging yourself, I guess, but the fun will come from seeing those leaderboards and like, oh, I'm so close. Let me just try it again and again and again and again and again until I get there. It's going to be some tough competition, I think, across the world, especially some of those hardcore, you know, Japanese players. They're awesome. So I can never beat them in Mario Kart. How am I going to beat them in an NES?
They were always better, even on the NES. That's why, like Mega Man 2, they gave us a normal difficulty, but in Japan, they just had the tough one because for them, that was normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or like the Lost Levels, Mario. It's like that game's so hard, but in Japan, that was just it.
That's it. It was just standard. This is just how we play. It's how we roll. Yeah, that's cool.
Get good, noob.
Yeah. Thanks. Anyway, let's move on to the games we're playing at the moment. We each have at least one to talk about. So I will start, and I am playing a little thing called I'm playing a title called Little Kitty Big City, which you may have heard of because it was highlighted during the Nintendo indie showcase that they did. The last two, actually, it was highlighted. It's now out. It came out just last week, and it's a really cute, fun game. I think it's from a new developer. I think this is their first title, if I remember correctly. And essentially, it's a third person or a third cat adventure game, kind of platformer, because you play the role of a cat. And I love this. I love it because there's not really a lot of games where you're not a person, like a humanoid sort of figure. And in this, you're a cat. And they've done the physics really well in terms of the cat's movements. You know, you have four legs, obviously, and the cat kind of, it feels like they have two parts to them, like the front and the back. And the back, you know, the tail and the back legs move a little bit separately to the front, almost like one of those, I was thinking it's a little bit like a semi-trailer or like one of those buses with the U-bend in the middle. It's not quite that obvious, but they're a little bit just not disjointed. They flow really neatly behind each other. You know, the back legs might go a little bit to the right. You know what I mean? Like, you know, cats kind of, they're really agile. They're really slinky creatures. Mm-hmm. And they've captured that really well. So, for example, if you're standing on a wall or a fence or whatever, your balance is really good. Like normally I was thinking if you're playing Mario, and I love Mario and I'm very, you know, I think I'm pretty good at Mario, but if it's a 3D Mario, or even Zelda, even something like Tears of the Kingdom, walking on a narrow thing is hard for a human character. I often fall off. It's hard to keep straight. The cat just has no problems. It just waddles across easily. So I think they've captured that kind of balance well to make it feel like you're actually controlling a cat. There's a lot in this game that's really enjoyable and cute. For example, you unlock hats and you put the hats on your cat and the cat just looks adorable. I don't think a cat would in real life wear hats. Trev, as a cat owner, probably could testify to that. I've had cats, many cats in my lifetime. And when I was a kid, I used to dress them up as you do. And they didn't.
How
like
often
it.
Do you want to get scratched?
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, the premise is that this cat has fallen from its lofty apartment. It's an inside cat and it was sitting on the windowsill. It stretches and falls down to the ground via a crow. It gets a little lift from a crow and it has to find its way back up. So that's the story. And you don't have the energy to climb that high. It's quite a high rise apartment. So you're kind of wandering around the city looking for fish to eat, which gives you energy. And along the way, you meet other cats, you meet other animals, you meet birds, I met a beetle. There's lots of animals to meet and little kind of puzzles to solve, I guess, and little objectives to meet as you work your way back up to your apartment. It's a simple premise and it's a little bit Japanese as well. It definitely looks like it's set in Japan. And having been to Japan, I'm like, oh, look, there's vending machines everywhere, you know, just like in Japan. And even there's this construction site and the worker is wearing like a Japanese construction outfit. So it's very much set in Japan, which I love. There's humans walking around everywhere that you can interact with. And by interact, I mean, you can trip them over.
Do they not have faces? I'm looking at some of these screenshots.
No, they don't. The humans are devoid of facial features, which is an interesting.
I wonder if that's how cats really see us.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering too.
We're all the same.
Exactly. And you need to use the humans for different things. Well, there's the objective of getting to the apartment, and some of the puzzles need to be solved to do that, but some are just optional objectives. There's a lot to collect in here. For example, you need to catch birds to collect their feathers. You don't eat the birds. It's really nice that way. It's a catch and release system. You just have to sneak up and pounce on them and then they fly away, but you get their feather. So you collect their feather.
That doesn't sound very realistic.
It's a very nice cat. And some of the things, yeah,
it's just expressing its dominance. It said, listen, you owe me. You owe me. Go home and tell your family. You owe me.
Yeah. Exactly. Remember this. I let you live. So there's lots to do. There's a lot to explore. It's a short-ish game. I haven't finished it yet. I've spent a few hours in it. It's meant to only be a short experience, but more so if you want to do all the collecting. So there's plenty of collecting to do. Like I said, you can collect all the hats, for example, which look like little Pokeballs in the world. And you go up to the Pokeball and bat it around with your paws like a cat would. And that's an actual hat. It ends up being a hat, I guess, inside this ball. And I think there's 15 or 20 or something. There's a bunch to collect, or maybe 40. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot of hats to collect. I've only got like 5 maybe. So there's the feathers. You can do photos. You can collect cans and recycle them for some reason. And also the main objective is to collect these things called shinies, of which I think there are 100. And these are mostly because a crow is tasking you with this initially. And crows like shiny things. The crow wants you to collect a bunch of shiny things so that he will give you a fish, which gives you more energy to explore further. So, yeah, there's a lot. It's very relaxing. You don't have like a life meter or hearts or anything. You don't have lives. You don't die. You just explore. If you fall off a ledge, it's fine. You don't get hurt. I mean, you're a cat, right? You land on your feet. So it's very, I guess, easy-ish.
But there's why is the cat need a fish for energy? You could just eat the crow.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. That's just
and that takes care of finding the shinies. Now you've negated the need for that.
It'd be too short of a game.
Yeah, that's it. But there's where was I going with that? I lost my train of thought. That's okay. Essentially, there's like a jazzy soundtrack to it, so it has this really kind of cool and quirky soundtrack that keeps it feeling very relaxed. There's no stress in this game. like, for example, when you meet your first cat, I was a bit worried because cats don't really like other cats. You know, they don't get on very well, you know, often. They're kind of solo creatures a lot of the time. But you meet these cats and they're very helpful and they'll give you little tips. Like, for what, for example, one teaches you how to catch the birds. They give you extra moves you can do. So you can do a stretch move, you can do a sleep move, you can kind of groom yourself. You can do a yucky, like a cat furball type of move. There's lots to unlock there as well. So I'm enjoying my time with it. It's simple yet fun. Very cute. Very, very cute, honestly. If you like cats, it's definitely one that you might want to check out. I am writing up a review for this one, so I'll have that up during the week. We'll see what my final thoughts are. There's a few little interesting, I don't know, technical issues where nothing that breaks the game at all, but, for example, you're walking on a wall and the wall kind of goes through the cat, or the tree goes through the cat, if that makes sense. It just seems like some of the edging is not done correctly, perhaps. But nothing actually breaks the game. I have not got stuck at all. I've not had any problems getting to where I need to go. So it's not like a glitch or a bug. It's just some of the environment edging seems maybe off. How do you put that? It's like a hitbox, but it's not a hitbox. It's like, you know what I mean, right? Hopefully you do. Anyway, that's
my thing. So.
Yeah, Little Kitty, Big City. So watch my review on that one. Kirk, what are you playing at the moment?
I have just started a game that's been out for a bit. We had a review code on this and didn't realize it. So we started a bit late.
That's my fault. They sent a Steam preview code, which I can't use. And when I saw it, I thought it was that, but they'd actually sent two. So it was my mistake. I'm like, I thought it was the one I had already saw. But anyway.
Well, and it's a JRPG, so Trev immediately thought of me. And he was right. I was interested in this one. I don't know how to pronounce the first word. I'm going to assume, since it's a Japanese word, that it's Eiyuden Chronicle, 100 Heroes. Mm-hmm. This is a JRPG that's based on an older series that I, again, am not going to try to pronounce. And it was a Kickstarter-funded game, and it came out a bit, and it got pretty good reviews on most systems. It got trashed on the Switch. A lot of performance issues, and I'm experiencing some of that. I'm kind of glad I got the code late because they've released some updates. I think there's a bigger Switch-specific update coming, and I'm going to wait for that to write the review because there are some issues with it. They kind of ruin the overall experience. A lot of load screens at just the weirdest times, and they're not super long, but there are so many that it gets annoying. There are some like popping when you're running around the overworld. But it's very much a throwback to the classic JRPGs. For instance, it brings back random battles as you're running around these various environments. Fights just happen. You don't see the enemy and you can't avoid them. You're going to go into these fights. And then the fights are turn-based. The thing about these games is, and the reason they call it 100 Heroes, is because you can put together, I don't know if it's actually 100 exactly, but it's a lot. Unlike most JRPGs where you've got, you'll start with one person, you build up to four or five, maybe you eventually have up to nine, and you can bring six people into battle at a time. This game gives you 100.
Wow.
And just, I imagine a lot of them are going to duplicate, but a lot of different, like there are sharks that run around on the land, and you know they're dressed for fighting, but all kinds
sounds
of
like animals. They're ripping off SNL. Wasn't that an old SNL skit?
The land shark. A lot of anthropomorphic animals that you'll be able to bring in, but aside from the performance issues, I'm enjoying it so far. I'm not really far into it. Kind of throws you into some battles right away. It brings you into your first dungeon. You start out with, is it six? I think you have six people. Then something happens and you're down to two. So it's one of those games that's going to constantly change up your battle strategies. And I like that in JRPGs when they give you either new people or different numbers. And there are some like environmental puzzles to solve as you go along. You'll get clues on how to open a door. Very easy clues, but I'm hoping that eventually gets more difficult. If you're into JRPGs, especially if you've been playing them for a long time, then this is right up your alley. But I do recommend, as most of the Switch review sites have said, there are some things about it that just don't work on the Switch. I believe there are actually some game-breaking bugs, too. I haven't encountered any of those. They may have already been patched, or I may not have gotten far enough. So far, I'm having fun with it.
Cool. I like the thought of 100 heroes, although it also seems overwhelming.
That can happen. Especially like I spend a long time trying to get one person up to where I want, and then I meet someone else who's already more powerful than that person. I'm like, well, now what do I do? Do I make my battles easier, or do I stick with these characters that I've used so far? And the graphics are fun too. They're kind of like a mix between old and new. They're not quite that, what do they call it, HD 2D thing that Square Enix was on for a while. Mm-hmm. The environments have a good amount of detail and color, and the characters do too. They're not really highly detailed, but they're very colorful, and there's like a weird disconnect between the backgrounds and them. Normally that throws me, but I kind of like the way it works in this game for some reason. You could kind of pick that up just by looking at the screenshots. So you don't need to, buy the game or watch a YouTube video, but the graphics are fun. The music is great. And the acting, there's a lot of voice acting in it. And so far I'm impressed with that too.
Cool. Sounds pretty fun.
This is kind of like a, I don't want to say spiritual successor, but is it kind of like a Suikoden? Cause they had back in the day, like, I think it was 108 characters.
Yeah, that's the game that I said I wasn't going to try to pronounce.
Not
that hard. Yeah, like in the old days, maybe I had problems with that. Since I'm trying to learn some Japanese, it might be easier.
Oh, I'm not even sure I said it right, but
I think you did. Yeah, Suikoden.
I remember it from I'm sorry, not to get off topic. I only remember that because in Metal Gear Solid back in the day, there was a boss fight, and he was supposed to be psychic, and he would actually like read your memory card to try to freak you out. He'd be like, oh, I see you like Suikoden. And it's like, what? How'd you know that? Like,
yeah.
I played one of those games too. I don't know which one came to the DS or the 3DS.
That was the third one, Snake Eater?
Was it? See, I'm trying.
Wait, for Metal Gear or Suikoden?
Suikoden.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was started with the T, I think. It was like to. Yeah, I'm going to think of it as soon as we log off.
Oh, yeah. I just pulled it up. I'm not going to get this. Tierra Christ?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Tierra Christ. Yeah, well, it's kind of like my wife's name, almost. Tierra Christ. So I played that one. I don't think I finished it, and my memory of it is vague. I mean, it was a long time ago, what, 15 years ago? I have a bit of experience with it, but not as much as I think a lot of people who were excited and backed this on Kickstarter are probably more into this and are more familiar with a lot of what's going on. But it's a good game, and it's despite being a throwback JRPG, it has a lot of modern features to it that make it more accessible than a lot of the like ports that we get of old games. But yeah, if random battles are a turnoff for you, then stay away.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of random battles, but that's okay.
Yeah, and this one's jarring too. Like when they happen, it's not like you just fade into it. It's almost like there's this big black explosion. Like, oh God,
you know,
take it easy on me here. It's late, the kids are in bed, and I can't have my TV making this much noise every time I go into a fight.
Yeah. I'm interested in this Land Shark thing though. I'm going to have to check this out. It's like from the original season. Like this is an old throwback that you mentioned.
Yeah, like the 70s SNL.
Yeah, Chevy Chase. I'm just looking it up. I'm going to look that up. Anyway.
Classic.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to what you're playing, Trev. Something called Glow Bay, which sounds cool.
Yeah, it's kind of a chill game, and I feel like the last couple review games I've played or even games I'm playing for fun have been more like maybe action-oriented, so it's nice to have something a little more relaxing. And what's interesting with this is it has a like a voxel style presentation, which you don't see a lot of, at least I don't see a lot of. And for this type of game, I haven't seen a lot of. I think the last one was, I forget. It just proves my point. I don't see it a lot.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a hodgepodge of sort of, you know, the popular things we've seen a lot of on the Switch. You know, you got your town, there's fishing, there's cooking, and but it's marketed more as like a like an RPG and you know, story driven. Like you have, it kind of starts off on a tragic note, which is another popular thing with a lot of recent games. They like to really depress you. I don't know why. But at least in this case, you know, maybe it's not as depressing as it seems. I'll leave it at that, kind of cryptically. But yeah, you get to wander around. It takes place in a Canadian kind of a coastal town or a coastal village. And you actually play as an older character, which is kind of interesting. It's not something I picked up immediately because of the voxel style visuals. But basically, I had you like pick your partner, which I wasn't sure if I meant fishing partner or romantic partner. It was kind of both. And I'm like, wait, my young character is married to this old dude or you know, whatever. But then the character's daughter shows up and she's like, Mom. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I'm old enough to have a middle, you know, an adult daughter anyway. So it's interesting. It gives the game a different vibe, you know, because you're used to, you know, a lot of games, right? You play as kind of a plucky, you know, youngster, you know, like you think of like Link in Zelda, you know, he's this young boy or a teenager. Mm-hmm. But now I'm playing a game where I'm somebody who's, you know, flirting with retirement, which sort of gives it a different, yeah, just a different overall vibe, which is kind of neat. I'm not sure how I might articulate that in a written review, but
yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. If you like fishing, if you like wandering around town, talking to different people, it's pretty cool. And I am going to get a review. This is a slightly older game, but it's got 3 reviews on Metacritic, at least for the Switch. And I'd like to see it get a Metascore. So, yeah, I'm going to try to get it up this week.
Cool. Yeah. Sounds like a nice little title to sink your teeth into. What do they call it? Like a slice of life.
Slice of life
fishing RPG.
And a slice of fish, because you have to, it's almost like a cooking mama, like you have to chop them up and cook. It's like button press timings. It's a little, I don't want to say buggy, because it might just be I suck, but some of the timings seem off. But they also don't really seem to punish you that much. Like my wife and I were playing, and we're like, this fish is overcooked and burnt at the same time, but it still looked good, so. Maybe it's forgiving in that way. I feel like it is, because even the fishing is kind of a little more simplistic, not like Animal Crossing, but definitely a step up from like a fishing simulator in terms of just ease.
You love your games with cooking, like your Dubious Food and Tears of the Kingdom. Yeah, we all love that. Thank you, Cho. Mm-hmm. Kirk, do you have another one for us?
I do, and again, it's another game I've just started. I just grabbed this code today and started playing it. This game is called Goliath Depot, and I took it because it's very much an 80s arcade game, but unlike a lot of the games that we get now that come from that era, this one was designed now as if it were in the 1980s. So it's a whole new game designed specifically to have fit into an arcade in 1984.
Cool.
There was one other game recently that I reviewed. I can't remember what it was called, but I remember praising it at the time, thinking if we could get all these new games that were designed to be arcade games back then, you know, straight across the board, then I'd love it. And it makes sense because this was published by Flynn's Arcade. And it's a platformer along the lines of like Donkey Kong or the Mario game. Like, what was the first one called?
I think it was just Mario Brothers. The one where they were in the sewers.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like jumping up and down on the different levels. And this one, the goal is to close all the doors, and you basically just have to run around the level, closing doors and avoiding all the obstacles along the way. Very fun graphics that fit the era. It's, you can play in local or co-op. It's only single system co-op, side by side couch co-op, 2 controllers. And it's fun. I like it so far. There's a lot of variety going on here. There are a bunch of different things you can do.
I'll get it.
Hold the phone.
Okay, there. Got rid of that. Sorry.
Hey, Kirk, was it Donut Dodo? Was that the game you were referring to from before? Because that's that's from the same company.
Okay, there you go. So if they keep doing this, God bless them. I'm all for it. But yeah, so it's got a bunch of unlockables. There are power-ups. There are medals to achieve. So it has some of the modern things, like, you know, I don't think it has – it does have leaderboards. So it's got all kinds of things like that. It's got a – it's the one thing that I do like, too, I haven't really experienced it because I haven't played it that much, is that it's got a built-in randomizer. So unlike, let's say, Donkey Kong, where – you know the pattern. You know the various levels, where the barrels are going to come, where to stand. This one can change it up. So it's going to be more of a unique experience each time. And I like that about it, too. So once I get further in, I'll be able to talk about it more. The review probably won't be up this week, maybe in the next coming weeks. There are 40 levels to get through. I don't know that I will. But... you know, certainly far enough to have a good time with this one.
Mm. I was going to ask how many levels there are. I also wanted to ask, do the doors reopen at any point? Like, you have to run around shutting all the doors. Is there any mechanic that reopens them if you're not quick enough to shut the other doors? We haven't come
across
that yet.
Not so far. Mm. Like, I'm not too far into it at all. So maybe that's something that happens later on, or maybe I've just been so good at it. With my history of arcade games from growing up and being a teenager in the 80s that I was just getting it done too quickly. But yeah, I'll let you know next week.
Cool. Trev, we missed an opportunity when the phone rang. Well, it looks like we have our first caller, and I mean ever. This is not a call-in show.
Oh, man, classic.
Yeah, just came to me afterwards, sorry. Anyway.
The one I was thinking of is when Homer's like, you'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
Yeah. That would also work. Very good. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. I did just want to quickly mention we have our Switch 2 Room of the Week. It's not really a rumor this week, but something I think Kirk brought up a couple of weeks ago that was a rumor was magnetic Joy-Cons. And Trev, you weren't online for that one, so feel free to add your
two cents. I thought I was. You sure?
Maybe. Well, maybe you were. Sorry. I don't know. It's all a blur.
I don't think it's a good idea.
No, I don't either. But I did see someone revisiting this during the week, and they said, if it's magnetic, could you, you know, tilt the Switch or the Switch 2 into a portrait mode, attach them on the side, and then effectively you've got a long device similar to an unfolded DS or 3DS. And I'm like, huh. I guess you could do that.
I do like that.
Yes. See? That kind of works.
Well, you like it in handheld mode.
Yeah.
But if developers are releasing games with that in mind, they've killed the ability to play it on the television.
True. True.
I mean, technically you still could because they would just, you know, you'd have a lot of blank space or black space on the left and right of the
orientation of it. That's true.
Well, did you guys ever play on the Wii U? They had some DS games. Like Virtual Console, and they had a few different screen options. You could hold the Wii U gamepad vertically and have the screen like that, but you could also have both screens on the TV, just like kind of different sizes, or you could have one image on the TV, one on the gamepad. Again, it's hard to say how they might do it with, depending on how the Switch successor works. Like, I mean, why stop there? Why not just do a folded version we can stick in our pocket and bring back Street Pass or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we've made it pretty clear today what we want. Miiverse, Street Pass, all the things that we love. Top down Zelda.
Just give us all the games, give it to us quickly and make them pretty cheap. That's all.
Yeah, that's all we want. Thank you. Yeah, so I thought that was an interesting idea. Anyway, worth just revisiting. But yeah, we'll see. And we've got now, so it's May till March. How many months we have? 10 months until sometime in that window of 10 months, at some point we will know officially what Nintendo is planning.
Sounds long when you say it out loud.
It does. It does. But it'll go fast. It'll go fast. And, you know, in between we've got a direct to look forward to next month, which we'll break down when it happens. What have we got this month? Paper Mario, and then next month we've got Luigi's Mansion.
That'll be out in what, like 10 days or something?
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And then we'll have the NES World Championships in July, and then mystery games to come. So a lot to look forward to. But yeah, anything else you guys wanted to add before we close off the show for the week?
Nope. No. Vote Quimby.
Nope. Love it. Thank you. Well, thank you so much, both of you, for joining me again this week. It's always fun to talk with you about all things Nintendo. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. We love what we do, and we love your support. If you would like to support us, we are on Patreon, so head on over to patreon.com/purenintendo. We put out regular magazines. We've just started work on our next edition. I was going to say issue and edition together, which would be edition. Yeah.
I need an issue.
Yeah. You can also follow us on Twitter/X, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. And until next week, thank you, and game on, everybody. Bye.
See ya.